Man, I'm glad to be back at Freed Hardeman. You know, I got real excited as it was time to come back because I got to be an interface leader this year. And what really got me excited, though, was my partner. Abby Seasongood does not like me. No, I'm kidding. We're friends, but we like to pick. And so I took my calendar, my planner. Let me give you a little bit of my feminine side. I do have a planner. I'm sorry. But I wrote Interface Weekend as Ceaselessly Irritate Abby Week. I don't know if the freshmen learned anything from me, but I know I accomplished what I was hoping to during that week. No, I'm kidding. It was fun. I've had a blast. Yeah, punchline. That was good, right? But it was a good time. And I'm so happy to be back here just with all of you. Hearing the singing a moment ago, man, it's hard to match Henderson on a Wednesday night, isn't it? It's awesome. I'm so thankful to Austin for the theme he's picked for this semester, Stand Firm. I heard that theme and I thought, man, that is so cool. And then he sent out the list and I got lucky enough to get Stand Firm in the Faith. And I got a little bit more excited. What a topic, right? The idea of what it takes for us to stand firm in our faith as Christians. Paul wrote to the Corinthians in 1 Corinthians 16 and verse 13, as we read a moment ago, "Watch ye, stand firm in the faith, quit you like men, or act like men." And then he says, "Be strong." And I think about how we as Christians are always supposed to be watching, right? Be sober, be vigilant, for your adversary the devil, like a roaring lion, walks about seeking whom he may devour. But Paul, for some reason, at the end of his letter to the Corinthians here, thought it especially important to say, watch ye, stand firm, act like men, and be strong. Well, remember the place that he's writing to, Corinth, a place that Billy Smith in one of our classes last year described as Las Vegas of the older times. This was a place where they had a temple to one of the gods with 1,000 prophetesses that during the nighttime hours would come down into the streets and practice harlotry. It was a city filled with sexual immorality. It was a place where if you were in a play and you were playing the Corinthian, you were the Otis Campbell. Shout out to my Andy Griffith fans. You were the town drunk. If you were a Corinthian woman, you were not well thought of. That's what Corinth represented. So he's writing to a church in the midst of a city like that, a place filled with corruption, and he's writing during a time where things were especially difficult. In the first chapter, he says that there were divisions among them. Well, some say I am of Paul. Some say I am of Apollos. And Paul says, is Christ divided? Was Paul crucified for you? He asks them. We get a little further in and we find out that they're not taking the Lord's Supper seriously. They're letting it be a divisive thing. We get to chapter 15 and we see that the Corinthians have questions about the resurrection. There's false teachers, there's false apostles. This is a hard time. And so Paul writes them and he says, watch ye, stand firm in your faith. And I say all of that to say that, and I'll admit, I may be aiming this sermon more tonight at the college age, but everyone can take something from it. But those of you who are just coming to Freed, and even some of you who have been here a few years, it's a hard time, isn't it? This is a tough time. There's new challenges. There's new temptations. And so we need to watch. We need to focus on standing firm in the faith, even when things are difficult. And that's the first point tonight. Stand firm, even when it's not easy to stand firm. The second one's going to be stand firm because someday it will be worth it. The third one is stand firm in the faith without looking back. The fourth one will be, and this is very basic, but that's okay, stand firm in the faith because Christ is the only thing you can truly stand firm on. So as we open, I invite you to turn with me to Daniel chapter 3. Daniel chapter 3, and when I think of standing firm in the faith, these were the guys that came to my mind first. Shadrach, Meshach, and Abednego. And I've used them in sermons before, but when I heard the topic, I thought, I got to go with Shadrach, Meshach, and Abednego. You all know the story, right? Nebuchadnezzar set up this golden image. He said, whenever I sound the music, you fall down and worship, or else it's the fiery furnace for you. And then in around verse 10, we see the Chaldeans. They come and they're telling Nebuchadnezzar, by the way, there's these three guys that aren't bowing down to your image. King, you might need to check on that. So we get to verse 14, and this is what we see at the end of the verse. Here's Nebuchadnezzar talking to them. Do not ye serve my gods, nor worship the golden image which I have set up? It's kind of like he's saying, is it true? Is what I've heard true about you three? But then he's going to give them a chance. He thinks he's giving them their only chance. He says, now if you be ready, that it... I'm going to move this down just a little bit. I'm sure y'all appreciate that, my loud mouth. He's going to say, now if you be ready that at what time you hear the sound of the cornet, flute, harp, sackbut, psaltery, and dulcimer, and all kinds of music, you fall down and worship the image which I have made, well. He says, if you'll do that now, it's fine, I'll forget about before, and it's all good. But if ye worship not, ye shall be cast the same hour into the midst of a burning fiery furnace. And listen to this, and who is that God that shall deliver you out of my hands? It's almost like he says, we'll just see if God delivers you. But then listen to their answer in verse 16. Shadrach, Meshach, and Abednego answered and said to the king, O Nebuchadnezzar, we are not careful to answer you in this matter. We need some people in the church today to take a stand for the faith like that. We are so afraid of saying something wrong. We're so afraid of taking a stand. We need to look at the world and say, we're not careful to answer you in this matter. Baptism's necessary for salvation. We won't use instruments. We won't clap during our singing because it's not okay. We need people who stand firm in the faith without backing down. They said, we are not careful. And then they say this, if it be so, our God whom we serve is able to deliver us from the burning fiery furnace. He says, if God wants to, he will. And he will deliver us out of thine hand, O king. But then he says, but if not, be it known unto thee, O king, that we will not serve thy gods, nor worship the golden image which thou hast set up. It's almost like they say, but, you know, we understand that God is not going to let us die here. But even if he did, even if he wasn't going to be with us, we're not bowing to your gods, Nebuchadnezzar. We need a faith like that, don't we? We need to take a stand that says, Jesus, come what may, I'm going to live for you no matter what happens to me here, because it really does not matter what happens to us here. And they were willing to take a stand. And you know what happened at the end of the story? Nebuchadnezzar looked in and there were four people walking around in the flames. And they brought them out and it says their clothes didn't even smell like smoke. They stood firm in their faith. And I think about how today we don't face a fiery furnace. But Ephesians 6 and verse 12 says, for we wrestle not against flesh and blood, but against principalities, against powers, against the rulers of the darkness of this world, against spiritual wickedness in high places. And right after that, he's going to say, so put on the whole armor of God that ye may be able to stand. And having done all, to stand. It's a spiritual battle. It's not always going to be easy, but we can't be people that say, well, God, I'll follow you until it gets tough. I'll stand firm in my faith until it's challenging. Let me tell you, it's going to get challenging. And people tell you that there's a Freed bubble. To an extent, that's true, but you will face new temptations here that you've never faced before. Maybe there'll be old temptations that come back. If you want to drink, you can find somewhere to drink in Henderson. If you want to be sexually active, you can find somewhere to be sexually active in Henderson. If you want to curse, if you want to gossip, whatever you want, you can still find it here. There is no bubble keeping sin out of Freed Hardman. You're going to be challenged. So don't let your faith be optional. You look at those three guys, and God was not option A. He was option A, B, C, and all of the above D. God was it for them. They were going to stand firm, no matter what. I look at another guy in the New Testament who seems to be the epitome of standing firm. Our old buddy Paul, right? Paul said in 1 Corinthians chapter 9 and verse 26, I therefore so run. He says, I run in this way. Not as uncertainly, so fight I, not as one that beateth the air. He says, I'm not just swinging wildly, I've got focus. He's got purpose. He's fighting in a very deliberate way. Not as uncertainly so fight I, not as one that beateth the air, but I keep under my body and bring it into subjection, lest that by any means when I have preached to others, I myself should become a castaway. Paul was not going to let his faith become optional. If Paul had had a faith that was, oh, maybe, maybe not, he would have given up pretty soon. You know, we hear a lot of people, you may ask somebody, are you going to play football this fall, maybe back in high school? And they say, it kind of depends. Oh, on what? Well, they make us practice a lot, and it depends on how much I'm going to have to cut out of my Netflix time or my girlfriend time or whatever it may be. You may ask somebody else, you're going to be an education major? Are you sure you want to teach? And they say, well, it depends. But then you come to another person and you say, you're playing football this fall? And they say, yeah, I am. And you say, well, you know, it's going to be hot out there. They're going to make you practice a lot. It's going to be tough. And they say, I know. You ask somebody, are you sure you want to be a teacher, Addie? They don't pay real good over there. Are you sure that's what you want to do? And Addie would say, yes. Because she wants to be a teacher. That's her goal. I'm sorry to pick on you, Addie. You were there. I just happen to know you're an education major. But people that have in their mind what they're going to do, it's not dependent on anything. And I look at Paul, and that's the way his life as a Christian was. Because he said in 2 Corinthians 11 and verse 23, are they ministers of Christ? He said, I speak as a fool. I am more. In labors more abundant, in prisons more frequent, in deaths oft. Of the Jews, 5 times received I 40 stripes, save one. Thrice was I beaten with rods. Once was I stoned. Thrice was I shipwrecked. He said, a night and a day I've been in the deep. And then he goes on to name all these perils, all these things that he's been through for the cause of Christ. But he didn't give up because his faith was not optional. It was foundational for him. And if you're here at Freed Hardman with a faith that is optional, it's going to get tough eventually and you're going to give up. But if you decide right now, coming in as a freshman or whatever grade you are, or in high school, or in your job place, if you decide that your faith is not optional, but it's the one thing that's not going to change in your life, when those tough times come, what is the old saying? Tough times don't last, tough people do. Stand firm. When I think of this idea, I think of the old song that we often sing after a baptism, I have decided to follow Jesus. And the line that gets me the most, and it just chokes me up, and I'm really not sure why, but it's the line that says, though none go with me, I still will follow. Though none go with me, I still will follow. No turning back. No turning back. And I had to ask myself as I wrote this lesson, what if none went with me? I carry this $4 knife whenever I preach because my papa gave it to me. He's my hero. He's the giant in my life. He's an elder in the Lord's church. We go on mission trips together. We talk about the Bible together, but I had to sit down and I had to say, what if Gary Weaver decided I'm no longer going to be an elder in the Lord's church? What if he stopped calling me and asking how preaching was going? What if he stopped encouraging me? What if he said, I don't even believe in this God that I've professed for years? Would I stand? Because you're going to get here and you're going to realize that it's no longer mama and daddy's faith. It's no longer your youth minister's faith. It's got to be your faith. And a lot of you freshmen woke up for the first time a Sunday or two ago, and for the first time in your life, you asked the question, am I going to church this morning? It had never been a question before. Your parents had rushed you out of bed, cooked your breakfast, maybe even put your clothes on you. Oh, I hope not. But all of a sudden, you had to ask yourself, whose faith is this? Because in Matthew chapter 25, it didn't say, your mom has been faithful over many things, or over few things. I will make you ruler over many things. It didn't say your youth minister has been faithful over few things. I will make you ruler over many things. It says you have been faithful over few things. It's our faith, and it has to be ours. And I think of Daniel, again in Daniel, but in chapter 6. The king has said, you're not going to bow down to anyone except me. And 3 times a day, all by himself, Daniel hit his knees, he faced Jerusalem, and he prayed like he always had. Because his faith was not optional. It didn't depend on anyone else. I look at him, and he's standing there, and they're about to throw him into the lion's den, and he's all alone. But God's on his side. But his faith did not depend on anyone else, and he stood firm. I think of David so long ago in 1 Samuel chapter 17, standing in that valley. While the rest of Israel stood up on the mountain watching, he was there fighting Goliath, alone. But God was on his side. Because his faith was not optional. Though none went with him, he was still going to fight the giant. And I mentioned this verse a moment ago, but we don't face the lion's den. We don't face the giants. We don't face the furnace, like I said, but there is a lion loose on the campus of Freed Hardeman. It's not the bronze one in the middle of the commons that we like to paint to be cute. But it's that roaring lion, and he's seeking to devour us. And if our faith is optional, he will. But if it's the foundation of our life, if it's the one thing that is not optional, we're going to be all right. So stand firm in your faith, even when it's difficult, even when the temptations come, in the second place, because it's going to be worth it. Think about what James chapter 1 and verse 2 says. My brethren, count it all. What? What's that word? Joy. When you fall into divers temptations, knowing this, that the trying of your faith worketh patience. A little later in that chapter, in verse 12, he's going to say, blessed is the man that endureth temptation, for when he is tried, he shall receive the crown of life, which the Lord, the righteous judge, shall give to him that loves him. He says you're blessed if you go through the trials. No, it's not easy, but the struggle makes us stronger. I think about Doug Burleson's Greek class. I just started on that journey. You can all pray for me if you don't mind. That's scary right there. And Doug told us, he said, we're going to struggle through it together. But he said, these guys in Greek 3 and Greek 4 that were sitting where you were last year and looking like a little Greek kindergartner saying alpha, beta, you know, those guys are translating the book of John now because they struggled and it made them better. They saw an end goal. They saw a purpose. And so they went through the hard times. So don't be so down when you know that you're going to be tempted at times. Push through it. Get stronger. We often talk about the verse in 1 Peter chapter 1 and verse 7 that talks about our faith being tried with fire. Not long ago, I read an article about a verse in Malachi. I believe it's chapter 3 and verse 5, where it says that he sits like a refiner and purifier of silver. Interesting way to put that. And there was a woman who went to a silver purifier to learn about this process. And he told her, he said, well, you see, I take this silver and I stick it into the fire, but my eyes are on it at all times. Because if it stays in too long, it's ruined. If I pull it out too fast, the impurities are not burned away. And she said, well, how do you know when it's finished? He said, oh, that's easy. When I can see my face in it. He's not going to allow us to stay in too long. He's not going to allow us to be tempted above what we are able, 1 Corinthians 10 and verse 13. So when we're tried, let's know that it's going to work out for something good, something better. 2 Corinthians 4 and verse 17, it says, for our light affliction, which is but for a moment, worketh for us a far more exceeding eternal weight of glory. You say, Paul, are you sure our light affliction? Is Paul suggesting that the life of a Christian is easy? No. He's saying, but this is a light affliction compared to how great it's going to be. Romans 8 and verse 18 says, and I like this because I'm from Alabama, for I reckon that the sufferings of this present time are not worthy to be compared with the glory that shall be revealed in us. The things you're going through now aren't even close to how great it's going to be. If you'll push through. So when it's hard, keep going because it's going to be worth it. And my mind goes back to Paul. In 2 Timothy chapter 4 and verse 7, we read earlier that long list, all the stuff that he's been through, all the times that he could have given up on his faith. But at the end of his life, this is what Paul is writing. I have fought a good fight. I have finished my course. I have kept the faith. Henceforth, there is laid up for me a crown of righteousness, which the Lord, the righteous judge, shall give unto me at that day. And here's the part that should give you hope. And not to me only, but unto all them also that love his appearing. But I want you to focus in for a moment on two words, fight and course. What's Paul implying there? It was a fight. It wasn't always easy. It was a struggle. I think of some of our cross-country people. I see Anna and Caitlin sitting there. What do you think of when you think of a course? You don't think of something easy, do you? When I used to get up for cross-country meets in high school, it wasn't, woohoo, can't wait to get out there on that 5K. I looked at that course, and it was tough, and it presented challenges, and it had hills, and it had rocks, and it was going to be hard. But you know, I never got credit for running half of a cross-country race. And so Paul says, I finished my course. It took endurance. It took struggling. But he says now he will receive a crown of life. It's going to be so worth it when we receive that inheritance that is incorruptible and undefiled and that fadeth not away, reserved in heaven for you. 1 Peter chapter 1 and verse 4. But we must finish. And that brings about the third point. You're thinking, wow, if these next two take as long as the first two, I'll never get to Gano. Well, you're welcome. But the third place, stand firm in your faith without looking back. A lot of us bring baggage to Freed. A lot of us bring baggage from this past summer, maybe. From our first year at Freed. From wherever we are in our lives, we have things that we've struggled with. But Romans chapter 12 and verse 1 says, wherefore, seeing we also are compassed about with so great a cloud of witnesses, let us lay aside every weight and the sin which doth so easily beset us. And what? Let us run with patience the race that is set before us. Back to those running analogies. It's going to take endurance. It's not always going to be easy, but you can't get tired out halfway and expect to get credit. Galatians 6 and verse 9 says, let us not grow weary in well-doing, for in due season we shall reap if we faint not. He says, don't get tired of doing good, because eventually, at the right time, you'll reap your reward if you faint not. If you don't go back to those old sins, those things that you were supposed to leave behind, Romans 6 and verse 6 talks about how we were supposed to crucify that old man at baptism. And we're told of the danger of not doing that in 2 Peter chapter 2 and verse 20. 2 Peter chapter 2 and verse 20, it says, for if after they have escaped the pollutions of the world through the knowledge of the Lord and Savior Jesus Christ, they are entangled again therein and overcome, it says the latter end is worse with them than the beginning. For it had been better for them not to have known the way of righteousness than after they have known it to turn from the holy commandment delivered unto them. He says, if you're just going to get halfway through and give up, you might as well never become a Christian in the first place. There is a quote by John Greenleaf Whittier that says, for all sad words of tongue or pen, the saddest of these, it might have been. And I think of myself standing there on the day of judgment and hearing God say, depart from me. I never knew you, ye that work iniquity. And having to know that I would spend an eternity thinking it might have been. I started okay, but then I got to Freed and I didn't watch. I didn't stand firm. I got weary and I fainted along the way. And I hope that will not be you on that day. I hope you never have to say it might have been. He was willing to save me, but I wasn't able to get through. Or I wasn't willing to try to get through. Don't let it be said of you on the day of judgment, it might have been. I think of that quote, and I think of the idea that the faint of heart, those whose faith is light, those are the people that look back. The faint of heart look back, but the faithful look forward to something better, something they haven't yet seen, but that they know is coming. The faint of heart, those who are not standing firm in their faith, they go back to the world for comfort. They go back to the place that they know they can find some amount of pleasure. But the faithful look forward to a day when they will be in heaven with God. I think of Hebrews chapter 11 and verse 9, if you want to turn there. It says this about Abraham in Hebrews 11 and verse 9. By faith, Abraham, when he was called to go out into a place which he should after receive for an inheritance, obeyed. And he went out, not knowing whither he went. You don't know what this school is going to hold for you. You don't know what you're heading into when you come here. Abraham didn't. He didn't know where he was going. God said, go, and he got up and went by faith. Because he had a hope, he had in mind the end goal. That home, that crown that we talked about a moment ago. It says, by faith, he sojourned in the land of promise in a strange country, dwelling in tabernacles with Isaac and Jacob, the heirs with him of the same promise. He was looking for the promised land, for he looked for a city which hath foundations, whose builder and maker is God. He was looking forward to the promised land, and because of that, he sojourned. He went out into the world with faith. He stood firm. And we read down to verse 16, and we see what we're looking forward to. But now they desire a better country, that is, an heavenly. Wherefore God is not ashamed to be called their God, for he hath prepared for them a city. He's prepared a home for us. And in our walk as Christians, if we start to look back, if we start to look back to those old ways of the world and we quit focusing on the goal, we're going to fall. Think about Peter in Matthew chapter 14. Turn there if you want to. I hope you want to. Matthew chapter 14. Here's a time where Peter took a great step of faith, but he grew weary. He didn't finish. Jesus has just fed the 5,000, and after this it says he went apart into a mountain to pray. And we pick up at verse 25, and it says, and in the fourth watch of the night, Jesus went unto them walking on the sea. You're sitting in the middle of Chickasaw about midnight, and somebody starts walking towards your boat. What are you thinking? Nuh-uh. Unfortunately, all they have is paddle boats, so you're probably out of luck. But you start paddling that thing back to land as quick as you can, I'd be terrified. And they were. It says in verse 26, it is a spirit, and they cried out with fear. But listen to the comforting words of Jesus. But straightway Jesus spake unto them, saying, be of good cheer, it is I. Be not afraid. And then Peter, he reminds me of myself sometimes, talks before he really maybe thinks things all the way through. He's zealous, isn't he? But this is what he says. And Peter answered him and said, Lord, if it be thou, bid me come unto thee on the water. And I think in that moment he had full faith that he could do that. And Jesus said, come. And when Peter was come down out of the ship, he walked on the water to go to Jesus. What an amazing thing. He's literally doing something that no other man aside from him and Jesus have ever done. He's walking on water. He started his course. But when he saw the wind boisterous, he was afraid, and beginning to sink, he cried, saying, Lord, save me. And immediately Jesus stretched forth his hand and caught him, saying unto him, what? O thou of little faith, wherefore didst thou doubt? Peter was doing pretty good. He was walking on water, but what happened? He started looking to the left and the right. He took his eyes off of the one he was hoping to reach. And maybe it's not even sinful things. Maybe it's just things of the world that you see all around you that distract you from the goal. You start looking back to sin, and you start looking to the left at things that terrify you, and you start looking to the right at finals and whatever it might be, and you see the wind boisterous, and you're afraid. What was the problem? Peter took his eyes off of Jesus. If he would have kept his eyes fixed on the Savior, on who he was trying to reach, he would have been fine. But he lacked faith. Tonight, stand firm. Do not look back. The faint of heart, look back. Don't be one that's faint, but be faithful and look forward to something better, something you haven't seen, but that you know you will obtain someday. Stand firm without looking back. And finally, and this is the one that I said was basic, and it's really okay that it is because it's also true. Stand firm in your faith because there's nothing else on this earth that you can stand firm in. Oh yes, there's things that you can take a stand for, but they'll crumble eventually if they're of this world. They'll be gone someday. I think about a day where I felt the world falling down around me, and I say that with a little bit of jest. But somebody hold Ben Hogan down. He's probably going to have him a PTSD episode here. But November 30th, 2013, a day that will live on in infamy in the mind of Crimson Tide fans. I'm a huge Alabama fan. We're ranked number one in the nation. We're headed into the Iron Bowl, 11-0, going to win an SEC championship, going to win our third title in a row. We're doing good. We've got a solid team. A.J. McCarron's leading this team like he needs to be. T.J. Yeldon's running like crazy. Fourth quarter, 28-28. Nobody saw it coming. We're on the wrong side of the 50-yard line with about 7 seconds left, and T.J. Yeldon reels off a beautiful run to about the 39-yard line on the other side. He goes out of bounds. They say the clock's run out. The game is going to overtime. But Nick Saban comes out. No. He has one second. And they review it. Uh-oh. We've got 1 second. Look out, Auburn fans. Here we come. They bring a freshman kicker out. He's 1 for 2 on the year. His 20-yarder being the longest kick of the season. Adam Griffith of Poland. We got a Polish guy kicking for us over here in America. No, I'm just kidding. I'm sure he's great. But he's really not. He's done very poorly since then as well. Sorry, too big of a fan, taking it a little too seriously sometimes. But anyway, he lines up this kick. 56 yards. Wow, what a kick. And he kicks it. Snaps, good. It's up. And we're thinking, oh my goodness, he's going to do it. The freshman's going to do it with 1 second left. It's a little to the right, but it's long enough, isn't it? Oh, no, it's not. And the ball starts to drop. And Auburn has a defensive back, Chris Davis, standing with his foot almost on the back line of the end zone, and he fields it. And we're thinking, no big deal, we'll tackle him, we'll go to overtime, but we've got our blocking package out on the field. And the only guy that touches him is the placeholder, our punter, Cody Mandel, barely touches his left shoulder pad, and Chris Davis races down the left sideline, 109 yards. And I can still hear the Auburn announcer, Auburn's going to win the football game. You're not keeping them off the field tonight, he said. And I was sick. And I can remember the feeling, and I felt the season crashing down around me. And I say that, and it's kind of funny now to you, still not funny to me. But I say that because things that we count on, things that we rely on, things that we never expect to go away here on earth will crumble. Alabama's dynasty is going to go away someday. Nick Saban will move on. We'll have the dark years again. Things that we count on here will go away. And I want you to ask yourself, where is your identity? Where is your hope? Where is your assurance as you start school here at Freed? Because I know in high school you probably had your friend groups, your athletic circles, those giants of faith in your life that you relied on. Maybe it was money. Maybe that's something you're still struggling with, but there's things here that you find so much hope in. Well, now it's changing. Same friends aren't here. Same people are not here. You're at Freed. You definitely don't have any money left. What are you holding on to? What are you standing firm in? Ecclesiastes chapter 1 and verse 14. Solomon, a man who had everything. I believe he said in chapter 2 and verse 9, if my eyes desired it, I had it. But in chapter 1 and verse 14, this is what he's decided after having all the money, all the women, all the wine, all the music, entertainment that he could find. He says, I have seen all that is done under the sun, and all is vanity and vexation of spirit. He says it's all pointless. There was an old farmer who was having the preacher over after church one Sunday. And the farmer took him out into his fields after some fried chicken, of course, the gospel bird. And he says, preacher, I want you to look that way. I want you to look that way. As far as you can see, that belongs to me. And the preacher said, awesome. And he said, as far as you can see that way and that way, that belongs to me. I spent my whole life building up all this land. And the preacher said, that's great. I'm glad you have that. But let me ask you, how much do you own in that direction? This guy had spent his whole life laying up treasures on earth where moth and rust doth corrupt and where thieves break through and steal, when he should have been laying them up in heaven where moth and rust doth not corrupt and where thieves do not break through and steal. He had spent his whole life growing out instead of growing up. And I want to ask you, and I don't just mean when it comes to money, but with anything here on this earth, are you growing this way a lot? Are you making a lot of friends? Are you accomplishing a lot in your academic fields or your athletic fields, but not growing up at all? Not laying anything up there? Because if our hope's here, eventually Chris Davis is going to run a kick all the way back to the end zone. It's going to crumble. 1 Peter chapter 3 and verse 11 says, "Seeing then that all these things shall be dissolved, what manner of persons ought you to be in all holy conversation and godliness?" He said, considering that all this stuff that you see around you is just going to be dissolved in fire one day, how should you be living? 1 John chapter 2 and verse 17 says, "The world and the lust thereof passes away, but he that doeth the will of God abideth forever." Psalms 20 and verse 7 says, "Some trust in chariots and some in horsemen, but we will remember the name of the Lord our God." It says, "They are brought down and fallen, but we are risen," and here's our word, "and stand upright." Because their faith was in God, not the chariots and not the horsemen. 1 John 5 and verse 4. If you want to turn there, we see where our hope and our assurance truly is found. The only thing we can hold on to. "But whatsoever is born of God overcometh the world. And this is the victory that overcometh the world, even our faith." You want something you can hold on to? Hold on to Him. All this is changing. All this is going away. But Hebrews 13 and verse 8 says that Jesus Christ is the same yesterday, today, and forever. It says He is unchangeable. He's not going anywhere. And I'm so thankful. Because everything changes here. People disappoint us. Money fails us eventually, but He's not going anywhere. And so when you can't find anything else to stand firm on, He's still there. Unchangeable through eternity. So tonight, I have an awesome hope. And so do you. Because I believe in the promises that my Jesus has made. Don't you? In John 14, when He told the disciples that He will come again and receive them unto Himself, I believe He's coming back for me. I know He is. When He said in Matthew chapter 16 and verse 18 that the gates of hell will not prevail against His kingdom, I believe Him. And so I can stand firm in this pulpit, on the campus of Freed Hardeman, wherever I go, I can stand firm because I know He's got me. And you can too. We have someone so high and so holy and so beyond our comprehension, and yet someone who is willing to humble Himself and become obedient unto death, even the death of the cross, Philippians 2:8. That's the kind of Savior we can hold on to. That's the kind of Savior we can stand firm in. Without Jesus, we're going nowhere. But with Him, we can go everywhere. Because He's not going anywhere. We can go about being the salt, being the light, being the joy and the example that people need to see. I'll leave you with one more remark. Martin Luther, at the Diet of Worms, was asked to take back all of his teachings. The Roman Catholic Church said, "Will you recant? Will you take this back?" And his response came, "I will not recant. Here I stand. I can do no other. God help me." He said, "There's nothing else that makes sense to me." And as Christians, we can do no other. I think of John or Peter in John chapter 6 and verse 68 when Jesus said, "Will you also go away?" And Peter said, "Lord, to whom shall we go? Thou hast the words of everlasting life." Jesus was option 1, 2, 3, and 4 for them. And so they stood firm in Him. I implore you tonight, stand firm even when it's difficult. Stand firm when it's difficult because it will be worth it someday when you're on high with Him. Stand firm even when it's difficult without looking back to the old ways of the world. And finally, stand firm in Him because there's nothing else that's going to last. There's nothing else you can stand firm in. Maybe tonight you want to be baptized to be added to the Lord's church. We would rejoice with you. Or maybe it is that you've fallen away from your first love. You've started to look to the left and the right and you've become terrified. Or you've started to look back to those sins. And you want to be right back there with Him. Whatever you need, please come as we stand and as we sing.